This is the 5 for 20 Senior Living Podcast from CAC Group. Your host, Peter Winterburn, spent 20 years as a defense litigator for senior living operators and healthcare providers. As a licensed broker and in-house counsel with CAC Specialty, he brings you sharp, focused conversations with industry experts. Each month, he tackles critical healthcare topics, giving you the insights you need without the wasted time. 5 questions, 20 minutes. The clock starts now.
Hello and welcome to 5 for 20 Senior Living Podcast from CAC Group. I'm your host, Peter Winterburn, and today we have special guest Erica Holman. Erica is a risk manager here at CAC, and she is a former nursing home administrator, or at least still licensed nursing home administrator, who has been in some capacity in that form for about 30 years working with operators. She is a dynamite risk manager and helps with all kinds of operations from our experience over the years with our clients here at CAC. And so this podcast really is designed to talk about 5 questions in 20 minutes, quick and easy, a 20-minute podcast just to update you on what's going on in the senior living and the healthcare world, hot topics in the industry. And so we're going to talk about 5 questions today, and we're going to focus on risk management because Erica is a risk manager here at CAC. She is going to give us some insights and feedback on how she does risk management and some tips and pointers for risk management in the healthcare space. So in terms of these 5 questions, we're going to work through them pretty quickly. And first, I just want to introduce Erica to you. And, you know, Erica, why don't you tell us a little bit about your role at CAC, a little bit about your background, and how you fit into our healthcare and our senior living practice here at CAC.
Okay. Thank you, Peter. Like you, I was hired by CAC Specialty to be a real presence as an expert in the field, someone who's got the hands-on experience, who isn't just a working in theory kind of person. So I bring to the table operational experience and clinical experience in addition to having served as a mediator for the state of Michigan, working on remediation, working in distressed buildings. And so as a risk manager, I bring to the table lots of experience with crisis management, with HR issues, really kind of, as one of our colleagues says, I'm kind of a Swiss Army knife. So whatever the client might need, I'm either here to help hands-on with it or to refer to other sources and experts. So I joined the practice to give our clients someone to call 24 hours, 7 days a week if something goes wrong.
That's great. And so when you're contemplating either working with a new client or maybe a client that we already have, and you're thinking about how to run a risk management program or how you develop a risk management program, maybe let's say a client comes to you early on in their process and they would like assistance in sort of building a risk management program, what would your advice be to somebody when they're starting to develop a program? What does it entail? Things like that.
That is a great question, because when you just think of risk management, everybody has a different definition of what we should be doing. So I focus on risk management from a clinical and operational perspective. So if I were helping someone start or refresh their risk management program, I would suggest that we start by looking at how they handle complaints and concerns related to abuse, neglect, and negligence. 3 areas are going to encompass both physical, mental, financial, and other forms of concerns. And so by starting there and then prioritizing where they've had concerns or losses or family complaints, then we could prioritize. I mean, it's pretty easy from that perspective to then encompass policies and procedures, how you review accidents and incidents every day. It takes a little finesse. And I will say that you do want to talk to legal counsel. That's where someone like you comes into play. I would never want to just plan a risk management program without talking to legal counsel and getting their feedback on what we should be doing.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. So kind of working hand in hand with legal counsel or maybe even an in-house attorney with the provider who has their pulse on the policies and procedures that are in place, or maybe working with the clinical director to figure out what those policies and procedures are and how they should be implemented or amended. So something like that where you would do a systems review would be key. And I think part of that systems review is also documentary in nature.
Absolutely. I think that that's a really great point because the framework needs to be really stable. So right from the starting gate, the legal counsel, whether it's in-house counsel or whoever you contract out to, absolutely needs to help craft all of the protocols for documentation, because the language that we use and how we document information contributes to whether or not we're going to be successful when and if we defend a claim. It also helps us with regulatory success. So really critical to have a full team approach. We need to have the right clinical people. We also need to have a good outside. We also need to have good legal counsel involved with that process.
Sure. So is that something that when you were an administrator, you know, working day to day in a facility, what was your typical interaction with somebody like a legal counsel or somebody on the legal or regulatory side?
Well, okay, I was a risk manager for 12 years for a large insurance carrier specializing in long-term care, and I have a very different perspective on how to use legal counsel, and it's that you don't wait until something goes wrong. You try to use it proactively, and having that relationship where my attorney, the attorney group I worked with, kind of knew what we were doing. We didn't just call them when there was something terrible happening. We would, hey, would you look at our compliance program? Hey, we're trying to perfect this program, you know, risk management. How can we make a perfect response to an incident report? And so I found that using them for multiple touches when there weren't big problems saved a lot of time, money, and heartache in the long run. So my experience working with legal counsel has been outstanding. You have to have an attorney group or a practice that you really, that you click with, and they have to click with you. It's like a marriage.
Right. So and along the lines of, you know, kind of when you're building a risk management program, and you're running into obstacles or you have hurdles to jump over, let's say, would you say that there's a primary barrier that you could name when it comes to developing a strong company-wide or a strong facility-wide risk management program? What are those barriers? Maybe what are the primary barriers to developing sort of a strong program?
The barrier that I think people mistakenly believe is there's no time, and a really sound risk management program will save you time. So this is an example of an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And so by being contemplative up front, dispelling that myth, oh, there's no time, we'll just do it the way we've done it. Well, doing it the way we've done it is usually not effective, or may not always be as effective as when we put in that really deep intentional work. So that's one barrier. That's probably the primary barrier. The second barrier is that a lot of people on the interdisciplinary team are used to working in silos, and to have really good risk management, you have to take a full team approach, and everybody needs to have something that they're laying on the table, because it truly improves the quality of our work.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of thinking along those lines of, you know, when you're wanting a robust, comprehensive risk management program, one of the barriers I've seen just in my experience in the industry is that nothing will short circuit that faster than a lack of buy-in from all stakeholders. So everybody who is, like you mentioned, the interdisciplinary team, really, I think it starts at the administrator level as the leader of the building, the leader of the community, to really build that culture of care and that culture of collaboration across the disciplines. And, you know, the risk management program is only going to be as good as the care is. And so it's one of those situations where if you're building a company culture or a community culture of care in the right way, you also need all those same elements in order to build a robust risk management program. In other words, everybody's working on the same team, there's cooperation, there's buy-in from everybody. If you don't have that, it's really hard to build a solid risk management program. Don't you agree?
I totally agree. And in fact, I learned a great lesson over 20 years ago when I was doing a risk management visit in a skilled nursing center, and I saw the housekeeping team leader was out with nursing and they were investigating a fall. And I had never seen housekeeping helping like that. And it really, that team really had it going on, and they had buy-in from the staff, and they also had a lot of accuracy. Root cause analysis were fantastic. So their fall rates really demonstrated how well they worked as a team, because the more that they perfected their system of being inclusive with the entire team, the better and better the work got. Everybody had skin in the game.
Yeah, that's a good example. And I'll tell a quick story too, just from my years as a defense attorney in the space. You know, I remember going into buildings and, you know, I represented a lot of different clients over the years. And so some companies, you know, operate differently than others. And I would go into some communities and you could immediately tell that this was going to be a good day. This was going to be a good investigation, quote unquote. You know, there was an incident at the facility and I was there to investigate it and talk to witnesses. And, you know, I was the company's attorney, or I was hired to defend the facility. And so I was always really sure and careful to tell those people who I was and what my purpose was, you know, as an attorney walking into these communities. But I found that once you did that and kind of explained who you are and what you were doing there, that you could immediately tell the places that were going to be fantastic and were really going to cooperate with you and give you what you needed, because they had a culture of collaboration and they had a culture of cooperation. And then on the flip side, there were places I went to where it was very hard. It was like pulling teeth to try to get information or understand what was going on, even understand what had happened, you know, the facts of the case. And so it's not that hard of a thing to do. It's a pretty simple concept, what we're talking about. But I think the execution of it is where it really just takes time and effort and energy from the people that are working there day to day.
Well, I think that your point that you made earlier about really being from the top down, like the administrator has to take the lead, because you have to create a culture where people aren't afraid to tell on themselves. And that's really been, that's probably one of the big barriers too, is that we are in such a punitive industry, or an industry that has historically been very punitive, that the staff has been afraid to come forth and admit their mistakes or tell us what's gone wrong because they're afraid they're going to get in trouble. And so I think the way you just messaged that is perfect. Like, everybody is accountable and involved, and that is difference.
Well, thanks. And you mentioned something that kind of leads into my next question, which is on quality assurance. So how would you as a risk manager, or how would a risk management program, in your opinion, tie into or align with QAPI or compliance and ethics committees, quality assurance committees, quality improvement committees? How would you tie in those committees to a risk management program?
I love that you asked that. First of all, if you have a QAPI program that's meaningful and intentional, where you're actually doing the work, not just doing the paperwork, risk management perfectly segues with that, because risk management is all about how are you crafting responses, how are you looking at problems, how are you proactively thinking. And so that can line up. Pieces of it will line up with QAPI, which should be privileged, because there might have been errors, not anything that would rise to a level of self-reporting to the state agency, but there might have been errors and opportunities. So that falls into QAPI. There's going to be other things that are going to fall under compliance and ethics. So when I think of things that fall into compliance and ethics, that's like the public face of things that go wrong. Or things that you are working on. So do you have equipment? When was the last time you got it? When was the last time you had it replaced? That should all be in part of your compliance and ethics program when you're prioritizing risks. So it's really an overlay. Like, you can't have good QAPI or good compliance and ethics without risk management. So it's just like one big ball of twine.
Right. Yeah. And one thing as you're talking about that just kind of makes me think about it a little bit from the legal standpoint too, is, you know, when you have a compliance or an ethics committee, or a lot of states have quality improvement committees where, from the legal standpoint anyway, the rules have been drafted in such a way where most states have the statutes in place that a quality improvement committee's meetings and proceedings and documents and information are not discoverable in either a civil lawsuit or in an administrative proceeding designed to incentivize providers and people to say, hey, we screwed up here. How did we screw up? How do we make ourselves better? How do we make sure this doesn't happen in the future? How can we be self-evaluative, right? Admitting fault in a proceeding that is going to, you know, be held against us. And so the real incentive there and the policy reason there is to make healthcare operations better and safer without the risk of, you know, you're pulling your punches because you're afraid of litigation. And so if you comply with the requirements properly, and I would, you know, you would need to refer to every state that you're operating in and kind of have some assistance with legal counsel there to make sure that your operations and your documents are compliant with those procedures in order to protect them from discovery. So I think that's one way that that ties in as well.
Yeah. And that's also why you need to have legal counsel helping, because these are really complex issues. And there are certainly items and information that you want protected. And so helping legal counsel, having legal counsel help tease that apart is a major piece of protecting the facility, the staff, and the residents.
Great. So thanks for that. And in our last kind of 2 minutes here, real quickly, when do you know, or how do you know that the risk management program is successful?
Well, I wish it was as simple as saying, oh, there'd be fewer falls and fewer pressure injuries. But I think really success can be measured by how interactive your team is. How willing is your team to come forward? Are you discovering things that are going wrong by accident, or are you discovering things because the staff is like, hey, we foresee there could be a problem? And I just think that culture of accountability is really the greatest arbiter of success. And that might be too, you know, it might be intangible, but I do think that you'll see improved morale when you have a great risk management program.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And like we were talking about earlier, it kind of, everything kind of does come back to the culture of your community, right? And how things are being run. Patient outcomes, it's been shown, are improved when you have a good culture. And so everything trickles down to that.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that even having, you know, having an arbitration program, if you have an arbitration agreement in your communities, or having your admissions documents be really tight and tuned up to the point that it's very helpful to the residents and their family when they come in, that the information is easy to understand and it's presented to them in a way that they can understand. You know, all of that is important when for risk management purposes too. And so I think you'll begin to see a lot of things hitting on all cylinders. And then you kind of say, okay, everything is comprehensive in this risk management program and it's working. So,
yeah, I agree. That's perfect.
Well, thank you, Erica, for joining us. And thank you, everyone, for listening to our first installment here of our 5 for 20 podcast, Senior Living Podcast from CAC Group. We hope you have a great day and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the 5 for 20 Senior Living Podcast from CAC Group. For more information, visit us online at cacgroup.com.